SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races. Weekend preview, and, well, we haven't talked to Nick. We missed Nick last week, so I get to say Happy New Year to Nick as well.
Happy New Year to you, Steve. Sorry about last week, but we're back on the beam.
Nice. Well, we're going to kick off some discussion with you on a weekly basis. We want to help people with their ticket structuring. And I certainly know that everybody loves hearing, your opinions and take the notes, toward pick fours. We won't stop doing that. But I really want to utilize your ticket building expertise and have people understand how to better leverage their opinion, Nick. And, this is the part of discussions of handicapping opportunities that just doesn't get enough attention. And whenever I ask people, what would you like to hear more of? It's always bankroll management. So I think we'll give people a real leg up when it comes to their approach by doing this.
No question. So what separates your show from anything else that's available for players in the world? Not specifically because you have me doing it or a variety of other people.
No, it's you. It's you.
Qualified or more. I think it'll be, I think it'll be very helpful. And look, I mean, there are pools that some of us are more comfortable in than others. And so there's going to be opportunities for me to talk through some of this stuff with you and listen to other people do the same thing and get a little bit better at it. So I think it'll be a great service to the listeners, and hopefully we'll find a winner or two.
Before we even look at these two races, and for those that haven't had a chance to look ahead, I mean, obviously yesterday's fiasco with the wind cancellation has sent everybody kind of scurrying, and today's sequence feels to me a little tougher than yesterday's, frankly, and especially because yesterday's sequence, everybody had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to prepare for it. Instead, you get the rug pulled out from under you, and now you're scurrying to look at a slate of races that you haven't spent as much time with, so I think that makes it a little harder, but before we talk about the handicapping of the 7th and 8th tomorrow, Nick, what do you suggest to people about pool identification and finding the right pool for your bankroll size, depending on what that is for people?
Yeah, it's actually a great conversation, and Andy and Nancy Stabile kind of talked about this on Talking Horses yesterday, because they were discussing playing the pick five individually, and one of the things that Andy brought up is that the hosts on TVG are very, very challenged in putting up tickets because they're mandated to stay within a certain budget, and that's very, very difficult, and a lot of them do a great job and hit those tickets periodically, because the issue, of course, being that you can't really say, oh, I want to play the pick five today and I have $48 to do it. You have to go through the races and structure your tickets in such a way that you then, at the end of it, you say, okay, well, this is what it's going to cost me. And in many cases, if you only have a small budget, because I would say $48, any two-digit number is probably a small budget to play a pick five. What you really need to do, if you have $48, is find somebody else who has $48 and play $96 worth of tickets. So you have to... You have to understand that that's basically step one to doing it. The other thing, and something that's a little bit of a misnomer about multi-race bets, is that you have to have a single. You don't have to have a single in order to make a multi-race bet. Does it make it a little bit easier to play it with a single? Of course. And yesterday's early pick five was kind of an example. I love to play the early pick five on a day where there's a carryover, because a lot of people will overlook it a little bit, and it's always a bet that offers great value because of the low takeout. And Battle of Saratoga in the second race to me was just a stone-cold single. I know that Koala Bay took some wagering, but it was going to be very unlikely for Battle of Saratoga to lose that race. He galloped at 2-5, and you were still able to get a $700 payoff with a sequence that started with the favorite. A heavy, very, very heavy favorite won the second race, and then the fifth race was won by a 6-5 shot. So, I mean, it's really an incredible payoff when you look at that number, a lot of it had to do with a late scratch of a heavy favorite in the third that ended up shifting all of that money to a horse that ran a very poor third, and Gary Siaka got the win. I would have actually done a little bit better if the second horse won, but still, it was a good result for everybody who played, and just the value that you got from that with the payoffs of the respective winners was through the roof. So that's a little bit tangential in terms of that particular bet, but what you want to do is identify the horses along the sequence that you feel like you have to have, because these things are about survival. Daily doubles are about maximizing an opinion. Pick threes, to an extent, are about taking maybe one or two opinions in a short sequence and really pummeling those combinations, whereas pick fives, pick sixes, they're about just getting through them. And if you need four to get through them, then you use four. If you only think you need one, you only use one. But don't tell yourself before you put that ticket together that you have to have a single.
And the danger of our conversations that we're going to have is that you'll bring things up that make me think of something. What is the cutoff point? What do you suggest people use as a mental roadblock when handicapping? And if the inclination is to play, let's say, a pick five or pick four, what is the parameter that should make people say, you know what? I'm stretching the limits of plausibility here. I should play just a pick three, or maybe play doubles over these next three races.
If you're looking, and so yesterday's early pick five is a great example, because legitimately you could have started that sequence on an A tick. My A's were 2x1. And so if you're doing that, then you're really giving yourself a lot of flexibility, because to me it looked like the third race was a situation where I needed three A's. The fourth race was a race where I actually used four A's, using Mintz and one of the Brian Lynch horses, the first-time starter, and Get Your Mind Right. And then I used two A's in the last leg, Science Fiction and Free Kitty. And so that kind of sequence really works out well in terms of having a narrow front end, a relatively narrow last leg, and that allowed you the opportunity to go 3x4 in the middle. If you put what you have to do is weight your opinion. You have to go through and assign A's, B's, and C's, or maybe you're more comfortable just doing A's and B's and at least trying to identify who you actually like. Because if you start trying to carpet bomb these races and go 3 and 4 deep in multiple legs, you're going to spend way too much money. And this conversation applies probably more to a place like Gulfstream this time of year, maybe Santa Anita as well, because at Aqueduct you're not going to have sequences where you need to be 3 and 4 deep on a regular basis. Actually did think yesterday's late pick five had a couple of races where you could find yourself 3 and 4 deep pretty easily, but they also had one horse that you could probably pluck out of that grouping. The way I played was to use the entry in the last leg as kind of a super A. I used Calculated Risker as kind of a super A, Will Burn Money, and Science Fiction. So I was set up pretty well. I was looking forward to the balance of that sequence. Unfortunately, we'll never see it. But if you're putting your matrix together and you're noticing that you're a little too heavy in the A column, that might be a situation, especially if you're starting it out 2x1x3, where you probably just try and send it in pretty hard on a pick three, because for every dollar, you're only betting six, whereas for every 50 cents, if you go 4x4 in the back end of that, you're spending $48. That's just probably a little bit more than you want to do, especially if you're going to give yourself some coverage with any backups.
Let's use that as the groundwork, and you know, we will layer these topics and the information with each passing week. Let's talk about these two races, the 7th and 8th tomorrow, and the stake, the Say Florida Sandy. It's got a nice group with a heavy favorite, and the race before it is probably going to get a heavy favorite in House Limit, who may be very vulnerable. And so with a big full field, and even if a couple of horses come out of that race, you're still going to have a big competitive field. This felt like a place where a double has potential to pay really well.
It really does. And this is about as competitive a race as you're going to find in New York in the winter. I do worry very significantly that Stony Bennett will scratch, not only because Linda Rice sort of professionally scratches horses, but it looks like he's in very, very deep at a distance that is probably a little bit more than he wants in a race pace-wise that looks like it's going to get very, very hot and heavy. Naming Mike Luzzi didn't really help my opinion that she was going to scratch. It actually made me feel that it was more likely that she'll end up scratching that horse. That being said, if that does happen, I still think you're dealing with a race that should be run at a pretty quick pace. You have Westerdale, who's going to stretch out second off the layoff. after being in relative close proximity to a pretty quick pace last time at Laurel. You have the aforementioned House Limit, who, as you and I talked about this morning, went wire to wire last time, but did it through very, very slow fractions against what was just an absolutely woeful field. And what we have seen from some of the runbacks from that race, this was a day that no figure maker wanted any part of. It was a track that looked like it could have been five different speeds throughout the afternoon. There was a turf race thrown into it that probably altered the track speed a little bit, given that there was an hour where nobody touched the dirt. And these figures are just a total guessing game. And based on the runbacks from that card and specifically from this race, that figure, but the buyer figure in all likelihood is a little high. And so House Limit is going to be bet off of what might be. This is a great situation if you're really in touch with what's going on and utilizing Formulator to see some of the next races for these horses. You probably want to bet against House Limit, both because it looks as if the pace scenario won't really unfold in such a way that his last race did, and it looks like he's not going to get. He's probably not nearly as fast as everybody thinks he is. So I felt like even without Stony Bennett, there's going to be enough pace to set the table for Why Not. Eric Cancel is a great fit for Why Not. I tweeted last week that Eric Cancel has grown tremendously when it comes to riding off the pace horses. It feels like he's really gotten comfortable doing that. He's put some excellent rides on horses throughout the winter so far. Proximate to Power was a great example a few weeks ago that he brought from well off the pace to win the nightcap. He won the nightcap with Never Never More last Saturday, who did the same kind of thing. And he's got the right kind of clock in his head in order to get that done. Why Not's always been a one-run type. Last time he had no pace set up whatsoever. Still finished, I thought, a respectable third. That was in a comparable one other than. That was a good one other than, too. In the stand, the man came back and proved his buyer figure by 10 points in the Cigar Mile. Another also ran from that race, American Rule, came back and improved, as so did Honor Up, who we'll talk about, that's running in the stakes. So Why Not looks like a horse to me that really could be very attractive from a daily double standpoint at roughly 5 or 6 to 1. I don't think you'll get the 8 to 1, especially if Stony Bennett scratches, but he's going to offer plenty of value. And the other horse that I would focus on as an A, if you were assigning letter grades to these horses, is Mr. Dougie Fresh. And I mean, quite simply, this is a significant claim. And with all due respect to Kieran McLaughlin, who's one of the best trainers in the game, when a guy like Jason Service reaches in and takes a horse with talent off of a barn that is always going to put a solid runner out there, then you're expecting Mr. Dougie Fresh to be even better. And the sign of confidence that you see in him taking the horse for 40, that he's now running right away in a one other than, obviously he knew what kind of conditions remained for this horse. You want to give him a very long look. And the fact that he was able to rate last time and make one run, he didn't face horses that are the caliber of these, but do you know something, in Mills are hard hitters. They're pretty solid mid-80 buyer horses, and they're really not that far off necessarily of what he's facing in here. It also feels like running style-wise, if he runs a similar race, profile-wise in this race, he's a great fit. So if you're planning on the pace being strong like I am, then those are the two I think that you want to focus on. And you probably want to take a little bit more of a critical approach to Yamino Maker and House Limit, who might just be a little bit dressed up coming off of maiden wins that either were against inferior competition or earned inflated speed figures based on circumstance.
You know, to pause on Dougie Fresh for a second, one thing that's really notable going back to last winter and his, you know, his career through the claim, and he was dipped in for 40,000 and then seized by M&A Racing and Service, and as it happens, he ran a career best in that spot. But note that he was coming from off the turf and a pair of turf races and races where he was going two turns. His three best career performances have come out of one turn dirt miles. 94 buyer, 96, 86 buyer, 85 buyer. All one-turn miles. Two at Aqueduct, one at Belmont. That's what he wants to do best. And this really, this could be one of those $40,000 claims that comes back to haunt you. He just turned five. He's obviously sound as a dollar, too. He ran 10 times last year and 10 times the year before, with just a couple of little freshenings here and there. This could be a really good claim in the hands of a guy that is just, you know, terrific with this kind of horse.
No question about it. And obviously, you know, you don't accumulate the kind of percentages that Jason Service does, whatever you want to say about his acumen, because you don't know what to do with horses that you claim. And it's obvious that if you're playing the claiming game at a at a significant level like he does and like a lot of his owners do, it's because they know what they want to do with these horses. They claim specific horses because of the upside that they have, and this horse feels like he's all upside. So he was one that when you were just perusing the past performances for this race, he kind of stuck out as one that was like, oof, man, this horse getting in the hands of Jason Service, this could be something that leads to a lot of success.
A couple of horses that before we talk about who you designate as A's and B's, Vincento and from Rudy Rod, the two, and also we should touch on Alured as well or Lured. What the hell's wrong with me? For Chad and Paul Pompa.
Well, you read that. That was like when Travis called Green Grass of Wyoming Green Grass of Yeoman. It can be a little tricky. It's still early.
It's pretty funny.
But it's still early. Vincento's interesting as a horse that you might use for a couple of dollars as a backup. Vincento's the kind of horse that you wouldn't be, if you're playing the doubles, which is the topic of our conversation, you'd have no problem getting Vincento alive into Gold for the King or something like that. Because Vincento's going to be 15-1. Yeah, he's got a poor record at Aqueduct. I think a lot of that is situational. I think these Rudy Rodriguez horses have a tendency to go in and out of form. He came back in a one other than off the layoff. That was certainly not a bad field. Didn't get off to a good start. Didn't really end up on the best part of the racetrack that day. So there's a little bit to like there. I think the one-turn mile is probably a little bit better set up for him as well. So, and he's a horse that, on his best days, is capable of giving the best horses in this race a scare. You just wonder if, even with the trouble that happened last time, if those days might already be past him. Alured is a horse that certainly showed potential early in his career. He was bet down in his first couple starts. I think there was some expectation that he'd be pretty solid when he debuted at Saratoga back in 2017. And his first start against winners was dull. I think you kind of expected him to take a step forward, finally getting over the hump and breaking that maiden, but he didn't really give them a scare at all at 6.5. The thought process there probably is that he is just a routing type, and getting back to a mile, you want to give him another try. This is a Chad Brown horse whose price is probably going to drift up. You could see him being even a little bit more than the 6-1 because he was almost 6-1 last time and just sort of ran kind of a middling race. I think you could also say that if you believe his pace is going to be strong, he probably will be helped by that. He's not a one-run sprinter. He's more of that even-paced closing type at a route distance. So I would not discourage anybody from using him. I feel like you're finally going to get the kind of price point on him that really makes him attractive.
Well, and I'm sure there's still hopes from this camp that this $600,000 OBS March purchase would, you know, live up completely to, you know, he hasn't been a fiasco by any means, but there was, you could tell, even you just looked at the horses he ran into on his way to breaking his maiden in November. I mean, he ran into Montauk, Vino Rosso, Consensus Thinking, Ilya Dare. I mean, he's managed to find real company, and it did take him six tries to break his maiden, but you know, they haven't gelded him, and they clearly you know, have hopes that that he's going to completely fulfill expectation now, maybe as a he moves closer to maturity. Allured 6-1. Let's go. And by the way, Manny Franco sticks with him, and of course being in the Chad Brown barn helps with that storyline, but he does jump off of Why Not to ride Allured and stick with him after being fourth in a similar spot back in December. Let's go top to bottom ABCX on these horses. Yamano Maker.
Yamano Maker, I would make a C.
Very good. Vincento?
I'd make a C.
Very good. Why Not?
Why Not is an A.
In a Fog?
And if Fog's an X.
Westerdale?
Westerdale's a B.
Dougie Fresh?
Dougie Fresh is an A.
Allured?
B.
House Limit an A?
House Limit I would make an A.
Uncle Cy, good old Uncle Cy, now 17.
Uncle Cy, yes, 8 years old and still going strong. Uncle Cy would be an X for me. I don't see him winning this race off a claim by Pat Quick.
Felix in Fabula, Randy Purcell.
Felix in Fabulous, an X.
And Stony Bennett.
If St- Stoney Bennett runs, I'd use as a C, just because he is fast and is capable of clearing this field. He's got a rider who'll probably try and do that, but my hope is that he runs, and if he does, I'll be alive with him on just to the A's.
All right, so 3, 6, 8 are the A's. 5, 7 are your B's. And your C's, 1, 2, 11. 1, 2, because I'm going to type this up and, or, you know, somehow put this online, Nick, so people can see it, you know, in print and comprehend the, you know, more easily. So 3
I'd
A's.
I'd much rather look like a fool in print.
Two B's and 3 C's in this complex. And I said earlier this morning to Nick, this may be the best race of the day anywhere in the country when we look back on Saturday evening. Let's go to the safe floor to Sandy, who was himself a wonderful hard-hitting New York bred, and 7/8 starting with Gold for the King.
Yeah, you know, obviously the conversation in this race starts with Gold for the King. He's been pretty tough against New York breds in the last 12 months or so, even going a little bit farther back than that. If he was a stakes winner as a 2-year-old for Charlie Baker, ran against Open Company last time and hardly embarrassed himself. Recruiting Ready was just a little bit better in that race. And Skyler Scramjet, who's kind of an aqueduct horse for course, also ran very, very well to be second in there. So no disgrace in finishing just behind them. He also gets, you know, some might look at it as an unfavorable draw towards the inside, but the good thing about that is that the horse immediately to his inside is a one-way speedball. So you're almost looking at him being set up as a stalker, which is exactly, I think, where he wants to be. I think he'll be very comfortable in that position. I think he'll end up getting a very similar trip to what he did in the Stallion Series race 2 back. And, you know, looking through the field in terms of other horses that I wanted as an alternative, you know, anybody else, you're really trying to be a little bit clever, and I'm interested in Winston Chance as a horse that'll be a little bit of a price on the cutback, as he was relatively close to a strong pace in the Alex M. Robb and, you know, didn't disgrace himself at all. He was actually still kind of battling when they turned for home, and I think a distance is a little bit beyond what is his comfort zone. But where's Winston Chance going to find the almost 10 lengths that was between him and Gold for the King 2 starts back? That's the real concern. So it's a situation where I think it, when you're really delving into the wagering part of it, if you like horses like Why Not and Mr. Dougie Fresh that'll offer a little bit of value, probably Why Not more so than Mr. Dougie Fresh, you're making Gold for the King kind of a lone A here. Or you're doing something where you may use multiple A's, but what you're going to do is you're going to come back and play Gold for the King again. So this is like that super A arrangement that I alluded to before, where if you're, you know, your base play is a $10 double A to A, you're probably going to play those for 20 or 25 if you're going to go A to super A, because there's going to be a chasm in the difference in payoffs between Gold for the King and a horse like Winston Chance or Honor Up or anybody else that you might want to use as an A in this field.
Let's look at, you know, the other contenders that feel marginal, we mentioned Allured having faced Honor Up. If Allured runs a big race, I imagine that that enhances his candidacy a little bit. It feels like Michelle Nevin's got him, you know, at his best at this point.
She does, and Perry Hernandez gave this horse an excellent ride last time. You got him last time at 9-2 against significantly weaker. You may have to take him around 4-1 or 9-2 against significantly tougher. So he's a little bit difficult to endorse from a value perspective, but he's a horse that's run races that are certainly capable of making him a threat. And there's no doubt that he's really upped his game since he's gotten to Michelle Nevin's barn. I think that sprinting types on the dirt for her are really what she's always been best with. The best horses we've seen her have generally been right in that category. So he's one that, basing your look at this race on the pace scenario, you're planning on Jewel Condisco having only one way to go from the inside. This is a horse with a tremendous amount of speed, and so he's certainly going to show it from the start. You're probably figuring that Royal Asset will show some speed as well, and if those two hook up with Syndergaard and or Morning Breeze in relatively close proximity, then you're going to have Honor Up settling and making one run just as he did last time, And as good as Harry Hernandez rode him, Manny Franco now, who's been one of the go-to riders for this barn. So there's really very little, other than maybe having to take a price on him that you're really not that thrilled with, there's not a whole lot to knock with Honor Up, and he's the kind of horse that you're going to want to use. You're going to narrow him down to a primary position in terms of how you weight your opinion. The horse in here that's probably going to take more money than he deserves is Syndergaard. And Syndergaard just reeks of last time was the time. Last time he was almost 6-1. You're going to get probably somewhere around there, maybe a little bit more than that. He was coming off the layoff. He finally got out of the gate. He didn't run on the wrong part of the racetrack because he did two starts back. You were supposed to have him last time if you liked him. You're not really supposed to take a slightly longer price on him tomorrow because the horses he's running against tomorrow are just, they're in a totally different universe than what he faced last time. And we're talking about Arthur's Hope and Spiteful Kitten, and you can't compare those horses to Winston's Chance, let alone Gold for the King. So he's one that I think you would relegate to probably the lower rungs of your multi-race matrices. And you'd probably want to use horses that would be maybe a little bit better from a value perspective. Like, for me, Winston's Chance and, to an extent, Honor Up.
What about Celtic Chaos?
Celtic Chaos is a horse I think you want to use. The 7 furlongs is really not a problem. It's probably a good thing. Yeah, he's had way more opportunities at 6 furlongs, but he's going to get a pace in front of him. He hasn't really been in a race with a strong pace where he was able to lay back and make one run in over a year. So this is exactly his scenario, and if I was going on and on about how astute I think Eric Cancel is riding off the pace horses, then this is clearly one that you want to use in a relatively prominent spot because he should get things to go his way. If Royal Asset pushes Jewel Condisco, or even if Jewel Condisco clears, the pace in here is going to be strong. That might take enough of a toll on Gold for the King to make it a little bit wonky late, and that's where Celtic Chaos can capitalize.
All right, let's run down ABCs here. Jewel Condisco.
I'd make Jewel Condisco a C. If Why Not or Mr. Dougie Fresh win the first leg, I'd be happy to be alive to Jewel Condisco for a couple bucks.
Gold for the King is a super A. Bluegrass Express, our man Richie Vega, and he's going to try 7/8 for just the second time, but he has gone a mile, two turns in Philly, and this is a horse who's come to New York and run well.
I'll tell you what, that's a sneaky good race he comes out of also. That's an open company race where we've seen Tommy T put up one good speed figure after another. Obviously, Identity Politics came out of that race and then second in the Malibu. And Fully Vested came back and absolutely destroyed an allowance field last Sunday. So there's something to like about that. I would use Bluegrass Express at least as a C.
He's a C plus, B minus
right.
type, you know.
Very professorial of you.
Thank you. and I'm grading on a curve because we like Richie Vega and Tony Black rides for him. Winston's Chance, obviously you like, this is more like an A minus B plus.
Right, exactly. I would use him as an A, but I would use Gold for the King as an A with a little bit more gusto.
Royal Asset, who is going to be part of the pace at the very least, and is a capable horse. He certainly, in any barn he's ever been, he's won.
Yeah, super informed horse. I'd use him as a B. I would not want to be beaten by a horse like Royal Asset.
Celtic or Celtic Chaos, depending if you're from Boston or not.
I would use as a B.
Syndergaard
would be a C.
Would be a C, shunting down a little. And that gets us to Morning Breeze, Carlos Martin.
Morning Breeze would be an X. It looks like his form is sliding the wrong way.
And Honor Up.
Honor Up I would use as similar to Winston Chance. He would be an A-, B-plus. He'd be kind of a horse that you focus on, but you're going to play him at a slightly lower level than Gold for the King.
All right, so Gold for the King is the A with a circle around him, and then the Winston's Chance, the 4 and the 9 are, and we're going to kind of do that not just in numerical order, but in order. Then the Bs are, we're going to make Royal Asset a clear B, the 5, the 6, and Bluegrass Express is sort of in between, so that's a little tricky. And then your C's, Jewel Condisco, the 1 and the 7, and there you go. Okay, so now we've got basically 368, structure the tickets, Nick, and how people, you know, with an average bankroll, maybe somebody, you know, that, you know, has got $40 to $50 to put into this double.
Yeah, I mean, let's say you're going to, if you're basing it on like a 1 to 10 unit play, you're going to play the 3 and 6 with the 2 for 10 units. You're going to play the 8 with the 2, at least based on my opinion, even though we did label house limit in A, I'm going to play him at a slightly lower level than I'm going to play Mr. Dougie Fresh and Why Not, who I do like a little bit better. So that's going to be more like a 6-unit play. That's basically going to be a play that gets you your money back because it doesn't really maximize a strong opinion. Then you're going to play the Bs with into gold for the King at a certain level. Maybe those are going to be 5-unit plays. You're going to play the Cs into gold for the King for 3 units. You're going to play the Cs into Celtic Chaos, or not Celtic Chaos, Winston's Chance and Celtic Chaos for half of that. So whatever you're playing into gold for the King, you're going to play half of that to those two as horses that you've treated as A-minus, B-plus horses. You're going to play the Bs to Bs for probably no more than 2 to 3 units. The C to A are going to be 1 to 2 unit plays and vice versa. So A to C is going to be the same kind of thing. Yeah, you're going to have combinations that really don't necessarily garner you a huge profit, but those are going to be the ones that you're playing simply because, and in a double, this is a little bit trickier than it is in a multi-race play, because you in a multi-race bet, pick 3, 4, and 5, you have other legs where you can then maximize that with an A to go ahead and boost the payoff. So in a double, you're basically going to play those at a price point that gets you your money back, maybe garners you a slight profit.
Very nice. Nice. Well, we'll try to slap this together for either for later today or for tomorrow, and I'll have it at the website, and then I'll link it off of Twitter so that everybody can visualize what the exercise we went through. What is our best return here? Probably Why Not. I guess Why Not.
Why Not with to Gold the, for the King? Why Not to Winston's Chance and Celtic Chaos are going to be, those are going to be the best returns.
So Ed, the idea here is to leverage your best opinion and the best, when we say best, the best is relative. It's your best opinion based on the value equation and the scenario that you can envision happening and being in the position to cash as much as possible. And that's what the whole exercise of the handicapping into ticket building, that's what this is. And it's not going to work every single time, and so you want to at least be in a position to get your money back at worst. I mean, you are going to take losses, but if you can break even until that leveraged opinion hits, depending on your strike rate, that's how you can make money at the racetrack.
Yeah, we're doing this. We're being as thorough as possible in labeling A's, B's, and C's, and really doing so for people that are going to be betting the pick 4 and the people who are able to bet the pick 5. This is a scenario where in a double, when you put your matrix together and you look at the probables, you can say, you know what, I don't really need to hit a CA ticket. I don't really need to hit Stony Bennett into gold for the King in the double, so I'm just going to play the A's and B's and make sure that if somehow Bluegrass Express upsets gold for the King, if Why Not or Mr. Dougie Fresh win the prior race, I hit that double. So it might be a scenario where you only play A's and B's, and I will quite frequently, in a pick 5 sequence, write down A's, B's, and C's, but then come back and only bet A's and C's, right? And just make tickets that are all A's and then 1 C tickets. So that basically your opinion is going to have to be right in 4 of those 5 legs in order to hit. That's really a primary way that I play pick 5s, because you get into that realm of A's, B's, and C's. Sometimes the margin between your B's and C's is so thin that it just gets completely washed out, and you lose because, oh, that horse was a C, he could have been a B, and you end up kind of hurting yourself. If that makes sense. So this could be a scenario where you really only end up playing like a modified 2x3 crisscross in the double and just try and hit your opinion.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM 1215, and we're arcing toward the trip to Las Vegas, and quite an outcome the other day on the Super Qualifier, where Duke and Paul left everybody licking their wounds.
And we've seen that before. They've gone 1-4 in the NHC. No surprise to go 1-2 in the Super Qualifier. So they're coming in form. I would imagine that that they'll both have a pretty strong showing. Those are guys that if you're around the leaderboard and you see them around there, you kind of say, shit.
Well, I can recall saying that there's very few people around the sport that people said so and so will at some point will win an NHC, but Duke and Paul were two of the maybe five names that you would say, and then Paul went ahead and did it, and no doubt in the course of our lifetimes, Duke is going to win one too. So maybe it's this year. Nick, this was great, and I know it'll be well received, and I appreciate the focus, and we'll keep helping, trying to help people, understand the approach to maximize their enjoyment and maximize their opportunity to win.
That sounds great, Steve. I look forward to it.
Nick Tamaro, folks, absolutely brilliant at this. This is his wheelhouse. We're going to wheel around and come back and check in with Hammer. We'll go out to California. He just came off of a trip to Tucson. They were out hiking in the desert, and they went to Tombstone. And did you see the picture that Hammer put up? It was great. Him with a bunch of costumed, Tombstone desperados or marshals or whatever. Oh, by the way, well, I'll bring this up with Johnny. Did everybody over Christmas? I forgot to bring this up. Did you see the photos from the filming of the Deadwood movie? Yeah, not trailers, but the first stills came from the set of Deadwood. Look at the awesome. Seth Bullock is now a U.S. Marshal. That's the one thing I picked up off those pictures. Check in with Hammer. I want him to explain some things about the structure of the business in California. I'll take a couple of minutes and do that. I think it'll be worthwhile. Ed DeRosa and Tom Quigley and Scully and Mike Welch, too. A little past the bottom of hour two. Second half at the races. Weekend preview. We'll start to look at the La Cienegas and what's the other stake? The Kaluk and Queen is Sunday. What the hell's wrong with me? The La Cienegas and the... I'm going to have to go back and look. I forget. Back after this, though. Rick Amberly.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
California Soul.
We're back at the races, 15 to the top of the hour. Rick Emmerle jumps in and fresh from a scene straight out of Deadwood, although Tombstone, I guess, more appropriate. You return to the scene of your college days, Tucson. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? Yeah, I'm learning fast that work is overrated. you read these stories where some people are going to be have a hard time retiring. Well, when that day comes for me, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to have a hard time at all. I'm getting used to this, but also getting ready to get back into the workforce. But yeah, a little run to Arizona. Great time of year to be there. Tucson was wonderful weather-wise. Went on a nice 9-mile hike back into Sabino Canyon. That photo you talked about, yes, was in Tombstone, the town too tough to die. And that was Wyatt Earp that I was standing next to, by the way, just so you know. But anyway, anyone down that way should make the extra effort to get down to Tombstone and do the OK Corral deal and the old Western town. And actually, just for Steve's sake, I had to tell him we're watching the Eagle-Bear game in the Crystal Palace Saloon there. On I think it was Fremont Street in Tucson. So, or Tombstone.
That's great.
So, if you need a good spot, a lucky spot, you know, in the future to watch a game, that might be the spot. So speaking of that, so we got a big game coming up here in LA tomorrow, of course, the Rams and the Cowboys. And then another one in New Orleans. So we're rooting for the Rams and the Eagles here collectively so we can get a game out here next week with those two. So we'll see what happens there. But speaking of here, little weather action. Today is going to be fine. It's foggy and cool. We're calling for some rain tonight. Somewhat heavy later in the Saturday part of the evening of the night, and then in the morning. But supposed to end in the morning early, this one. So it could have an effect on some races tomorrow. It'll just depend I'm still sure they'll seal the track and get ready at the hill races, of course, are the first ones to take a look at. And then should be fine on Sunday, but then they're calling for 3-4 days of rain early next week. So we're just getting that January cycle to keep an eye on things here. And I tell you what, I'm sleeping at night when it's raining. I don't have to worry. You know, it's amazing not having to think about, you know, who's going to stay in. Do we take it off? But so just think about that when you're looking at tomorrow's races in the morning to check, see what they do. And so speaking of the track, you know, Dennis Moore, the longtime track man at Santa Anita, who I worked with the last 5-6 years, was just tremendous. He does not do Santa Anita anymore. He stopped at the end of the year. He continues to do Del Mar and Los Alamitos. It's just he lives 50, 60 miles from here, and just decided that, you know what, it's just too much to do, and so he took these. He's not doing Santa Anita anymore. But the good news is Andy LaRocca, who's been his able disciple for here and has worked at Santa Anita for many, many years, has taken over, and he'll follow Dennis's program. So I don't think you see too much change in anything going on especially coming out of the rain, and they'll probably follow the same procedures of keeping the track sealed on days that they think it's going to rain. If they have to stop training, they'll continue to do that and sacrifice training for trying to get them having a nice surface during the races. So it's worked over. You sacrifice a little bit. A lot of tracks just leave the track open in the morning and deal with it and go on. The system here has been trying to preserve the race days over the training days and zigzag in and out of the rain. But it's worked over the long haul. And so that's just, we're coming into that cycle here where how long it continues, not sure. But so there is some rain in the next week or so to keep your eye on.
We've been so far. It's been a relatively innocuous. We had that one little spate of wet weather, but it is the time if there's something's going to come, it'll be here in the next few weeks, give or take.
Through February, even when I was there, we need it. You know, the most important of the rain is not here, but up in the mountains with the snowpack. And I guess it's snowing up at Mammoth and our local mountain 6 hours away, Mammoth, and then up in Tahoe. That's where we get most of our water. So anyway, enough of that stuff. But that's what kind of cycle we're looking for. So in the next few weeks, when you're handicapping out here, you know, you might want to pull up one of your favorite weather sites and just keep your eye on the rain. So you can see Saturday in the Las Vienegas that John Sadler has taken some precautions as far as the rain goes, and that race down the hill which came up pretty tough. You got two Sadlers, two Millers, and two Proctor horses in there, and three others. But John has had Seth Selcourt and Lady Subi, and has both of them entered on Saturday, and then both of them entered in the Kalukan Queen, the dirt race, on Sunday. So he'll probably be watching the weather and see what happens. I was kind of a little shocked when I saw Selcourt in there, but I'm sure, Lady Subi and Selcourt, yeah, when I saw her, just waiting to see how what happens if they come off. You know, there's a chance that she could run there, but looking at Lady Subi, who's won an off the turfer, which could be a similar thing here, where it comes off the turf and the track's okay, and she has some turf experience too. So if I had to choose right now without talking to him, I would think Selcourt would run them on Sunday, and Lady Subi would run down the hill. But you never know. Selcourt, of course, is that nice sprinter that John had last year. Had a little problem earlier in the year and tried to make a comeback in the Breeders' Cup first time back. And that didn't work out. He had to think at that time on that day, with John obviously hadn't won a Breeders' Cup race. And here's his, I think, the first foray into the day that was an early race. And it's like, oh, geez, here we go. The horse runs up the track. And he's probably thinking at this time somewhere back there, oh no, is this going to be another one of those days? But of course, he pulled it out at the end. But she was the best sprinter we had early in the year here. She won the same race last year, which is en route to the Santa Monica, which is the same thing here. And maybe her goal, her little first term goal, may be the Beholder, which she moved up in the calendar, the Grade 1 mile. So I kind of see her staying on the dirt, but you never know with them. And if it stays on the turf, I mean, Peter Miller has this race pretty much over a barrel. His two fillies in here, Belvoir Bay, who beat the boys last year once here in the San Simeon and didn't run bad against the boys up in Canada. She was the queen of the hill here last year, and Painting Colors, who was ready to take over when Belvoir Bay retires. His two horses there look very, very tough. Tom Proctor has horses that went in here, and I'm going to throw in a horse that I think has one more in her that's going to be a price. That's Miss Southern Miss. She's 5 years old, and I know Keith has tried this course a few times. She does have a win on it. I think she's got something left. He was the last the last meet, he kept bugging, you know, was looking for a race. We had an allowance race early in the meet in October. She didn't run too bad. I thought she'd run better than the Ken Matty, but if you're looking for a little bit of a bomb in there, I think she's still got a good one left there. But once again, keep your eye on the weather. Now we go to go to the La Quiñada, which is the first race in the dirt long filly series. And if you remember, not too long ago, there were a couple of these races taken down grade wise from grade one to grade two. I think we lost the Santa Margarita and the Zenyatta. And we'll go over this race, and then I'll explain a couple things or what I'm seeing. So this race in here, if this is what's kind of quote left over, it's a weak division. To start out with, you have actually five of the seven horses made their last start or their second to last start on the turf coming in. So the weakness of the division, some guys probably said, you know what, let's just try the dirt again. Maybe we can pick up some black type that is graded. But this is a rough race. I think it's True Royalty's race to lose. You know, you get to the two horses on the outside, Escape Clause and KP Wildcat. Now, these are horses coming in from Canada, Cinnaboya Downs and Northman's Park and Century Downs and some Canterbury's in there. That's Escape Clause. Now, she came in at the end of Del Mar and didn't run too bad with three races on the turf. Actually ran pretty well. And KP Wildcat, who was the queen of the New Mexico circuit, and they're... What are they, 5-2 and 4-1 on the program? I don't know. I first time around, I have to take a pass just because even though they're both win machines, they'll still take a couple of the weaker-looking locals. Like I said, I think it's True Royalty's race to lose. But Lamona from the Richard Balta stable, who started out running a lot of horses, and he's winning pretty good. When he gets on a roll, he's on a roll. If you go back to that race before the Zenyatta race, I think that race handles these pretty good. So if the price is decent, I would take a little look at Lamona in there, but wow, not much. So think about this. So think about these seven horses. And so let's just say we had these seven horses and we had Unique Bell in there. Okay. So that was part of the problem with the grade one situation. We had seven horses that were okay and one superstar in there. Many times over, because remember, we've had Unique Bella, we've had Beholder, we've had Zenyattas, we've always had a real Songbird, real good ones, and then the rest of the field maybe wasn't so good. So that was part of the reason why some of the races got moved down. Like, yeah, well, you had to look who was in there, but then you look behind, and there wasn't a whole lot. So like I said, there were some races, and not just here in California, just around. You had a field like this with one superstar, and wow, that's a grade one. And in essence, it really, the depth wasn't there. So that's the reason behind some of the actions you see and probably will see in the future in the graded stakes deal. So just keep that in mind when some of the races went down. I know there were some people upset, but I mean, I didn't agree with all of them. But this is the scenario that we had and that we've seen a lot more around the country, and the decision was, is one good superstar enough to say that that's a grade one race if you don't have any cover, so to speak. So people have, if there's fillies back east or in the Midwest that want a place, it might be pretty good. This might be a spot to come for a dirt long filly. I know it's a weak division year in, year out anywhere, but this not a great start to that division with this bunch. And then Sunday we have the Kalukan Queen, which is a sprint. And let's just take it. Let's just say that Silcourt does run, and the other saddler decides not to. I mean, if she comes back anywhere near her form, she'll roll over these. And once again, this is a prep for the Santa Monica, and that's the way that goes. So that's kind of the racing here. This mid-January, stakes are not the greatest. Gets better at the end of the month. We have some cowbred races scheduled, and then the Pegasus Day comes up, and then it picks up a little bit. But But that's what we have out here in California. And that's it. I tell you, it's fun. It's funny starting to get back into handicapping and looking at different things and starting to follow it a little bit closer. But even though I'm looking at the same horses and the same PPs that I have been for years, so I'm looking at it in a different way.
Hmm.
I don't know as much. I don't remember this guy coming in screaming about not being able to get in or wanted to get in or, you know, there's all this. I mean, I had too much information. I mean, it is. You look at a horse and you remember, like, oh, that right. This race didn't go last week. He wanted to go in here. I wonder if it's an easier spot, or this rider didn't want to ride that.
Sure.
So it's actually, I've just been kind of cleansed a little bit, and it is amazing. I see a lot more. I see a lot more than I did before, because I had stuff that I didn't want to see. So it's, I think until I get back working here shortly, I'm really enjoying handicapping now and playing a few races each day to get back into it. And it's amazing. The stuff that you've learned over the years about handicap is actually coming out now. And I just don't have any preconceived notions going into the races that I used to have. So it's pretty wild. It's kind of opened up a new, going back to the way it used to be. It's pretty cool for me anyway.
Well, and there is that element of getting to a point where you have too much information, and nowhere is that more evident than at the boutique meets in maiden special spots during the summer, in particular Del Mar and Saratoga, Keeneland, and you get those races, Rick, where every single horse in the race you've heard something about. There'll be 10 horses, and 8 of them are the fastest horse in the world. And this is the spot we picked this out months ago, and we knew right. It's ridiculous, and you get to the point where you'd rather just net all that out and just look at it from a pure handicapping. Let's look at the pedigrees. Let's look at the workouts and do it that way instead of having heard about 7 out of the 10 horses.
Well, what you really realize is that nobody really knows anything. They know everything and nothing at all. And, you get sucked into it, and it's usually the last person that you talk to that you go with. I mean, there was a line in the book somewhere where basically, the guy was going to the track, some big shot owner was going to the track, and he was going to bet on the 4 horse, and he gets there, and he gets his shoe shined, and the shoe shine guy says, hey, what about the 5? The guy ends up going to the window, bets the 5, because some shoe shine guy told him the 5. Because he thought he knew more than you did. So that was one of the first things I got taught. In the whole scheme of things, nobody knows more than you do on, quote, inside information. There's better handicappers, obviously, than anybody else. But not to say once in a while you don't get a push from someone that, out of the blue that, wow, never says a word. Then those are the ones you usually go with. But it is funny on those 2-year-old races where you ask, everybody comes up with a different horse and blows your mind. So,
well, nice weekend. We didn't touch on the maiden race, but I will mention that you got a group that caught my eye. That downhill, I hope it stays together and we don't lose that race, because the personal favorite.
The race on
Saturday.
Saturday, you're talking about?
Yeah, the girls coming down the hill.
Yeah,
there's a few that have started and are trying some different things, but then there's also the first time starter, Hollywood Girl, and Hollywood Story's most recent runner. This one ended up with John Shurriff. CRK paid big money for this filly, and $875,000 yearling. And it's interesting that I don't see Shurriff start them down the hill. Kind of interesting to me that's where he wants to go with her right away. I found that intriguing. I'm a sucker for Hollywood Story and her produce anyway, but that's a race worth watching.
It's funny, I did print that PPs of that race, and I put it aside just a few minutes ago thinking we probably won't get to that, but I did see that. And you mentioned John Shurriff about starting a race down the hill. He's not used to starting a horse too often at all anyway, and I have to laugh because when we were, after we turned in a stall app, and we always talked to him, and, you know, John's just such a great guy, and, you know, it's hard to get mad at him, but over the years, it's like, John, come on, you got to run some more, and we went over his horses here, and that guy, and I mean, it looked like every horse was ready to roll. He has a lot of, you know, well-bred maidens, and I remember talking, like, you should be at every maiden race for the first month, kidding around, and then I looked. I mean, I'm telling you, he's got horses in here. He's got some horses in Sunday. I think he's going to have more starts in the first 3 weeks than he's ever had. I said, but that, I guess it all just took me for me to get out of there for him to start running. But I had to laugh that, like you said, I mean, he's made 6 starts already up to this sheet. I think he'll have 10 by the weekend. And I mean, that's usually half the meet for him. I mean, it's just the way he is, very methodical when he goes. And if he misses a race, he's not that worried about it. And you know, and those are some of the things that used to keep me up at night, worried about stuff like that. And it's funny, then there's a horse on Sunday, there's a little allowance race, a little mile in the turf that's 3 of the van, some horses that may be left over from the race earlier in the year, the St. Gabriel, I guess. And big score. I used to circle that horse, and that's another horse that keeps me up at night. This horse has run 16 times. He's been stable at Santa Anita for 3 years, and he has 4 starts at Santa Anita, 12 starts out of town. And the horse would just never run at Santa Anita. And he was in the other day in the stake, and I was going up. He didn't run there again, so now he's back in again. So hopefully this horse will get a run in there. I mean, he looks tough in that spot, but just another one of the horses I put down. And I called it a non-sleep horse. Another horse used to keep me up at night, just wondering why he was there. So it's pretty wild what I don't have to go through right now. So it's pretty fun.
I love it. Yeah. It should be a good weekend. And Hammer, enjoy the Ram game tomorrow. And we'll see where we stand next week.
Yeah, that sounds great. And then you mentioned you wanted to talk about some of the horses and stuff. We'll get that together. And we'll do that. Maybe we won't force it in, but we'll have just a separate discussion on that.
Absolutely.
On some of the horsemen's groups and how discussions are made, and on how purses and stakes are decided, and things like that. That'd be great. Look forward to that.
Absolutely. I do want to do that exercise because I think it's something some people, you know, would benefit from understanding, you know, the structure out there and you know, purse structure. And the horsemen's. I'll also do it when we go to the HBPA convention this year. We'll spend some time on it because I think players in particular, and I would even think, you know, some people that are somewhat new to the ownership side would really benefit from understanding how what the flow chart is when it comes to, you know, responsibilities of the racetrack versus the horsemen, and the various entities and how, you know, how purses are, how they're funded, and you know, where the money goes. We haven't done that in a long time, and I think it's a worthwhile conversation. And you're perfect to kind of open the kimono out there. Perfect opportunity to do that. Hammer, good luck this weekend. I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
Fly, Eagles, fly. Let's do it. Is that right? Am I allowed to say that?
You got it. Well done. Well done.
All right. That
sounds Hammer,
great.
Everybody.
Good luck to you, too. Enjoy.
Thanks, buddy. We'll take a timeout here. Just past the top of the hour, we got to get Tom Quigley in, and then we got DeRosa and Scully, and we got time for Mike Welch. We'll get Mike in, too, see if he's got any workout ideas. Before noon rolls around, I should mention Beat the Host this week with Quigley coming. But it's this week, it's Millie Ball. Camilla Yakteen will help. She'll pitch in on some of the decision making. But of course, last week, anybody that cashed a ticket among their 8 plays were able to beat the host and qualify for the championship in February. If you were successful last week, come back at it tomorrow. And Millie's races, typically by about 5 o'clock, they'll be posted. All right? Millie Ball, good luck to Good luck to Millie. Back after this, Tom Quigley, who's just a couple of weeks away on his turn on Beat the Host. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.